Aloha, and welcome to Stand for Hawaii on News Radio 830 KHVH. Are you tired of corruption, the high cost of living, crime on the rise, and government overreach? Do you agree we need a system of checks and balances? Stand for Hawaii looks at these challenges and discusses solutions that put the needs of Hawaii's people first. Each week, we highlight ordinary people willing to step up to make a difference in these extraordinary times. Now, here's the host of Stand for Hawaii, Rick Hamada.
Once again, we welcome you. It is 9:07 in the morning, News Radio 830 KHVH. Aloha, one and all. Thank you for being a part of the program. As John mentioned, it is Stand for Hawaii, presented by the Hawaii Republican Party. We join each other at this time each and every Saturday morning. Today, no exception. And returning from a well-deserved vacation in the Bahamas and to Bermuda and then to, I don't get this, Akron, Ohio. Why did you choose Akron as a vacation destination? Lynn Finnegan, chair of the Hawaii Republican Party.
Was that a virtual reality vacation that I was on, that I was using some glasses, sitting, you know, in some room, you know, traveling the world? Is that it?
You know, usually I use umbrellas when it's raining, but you evidently placed them in glasses of drinks. I'm not sure how the umbrella protects that drink, but it looked great.
Yeah, and it looked a lot like my laptop screen.
Yes, it did. You did make that very clear, very clear. Lonnie did a great job.
Awesome.
And our friends from last week, we'll get to know some more friends that are in studio in a moment.
Yes, yes.
Bring us up to speed, the latest and greatest with the Hawaii Republican Party, and the clock is ticking.
Well, you know, we're moving and shaking. We've had a lot of meet and greets across this great state. We've also have candidates that are going door to door in their districts. They're working really hard. As you know, in Hawaii, you know, the power play, the amount of money that goes into the Democrat races is tremendous. And it outweighs, you know, far outweighs what we do. But what we've seen is that a lot of, you know, old fashioned campaigning, shaking hands, going door to door, is what's happening with our candidates. We're super happy about the progress that we are making. It's not going to show in all of the commercials on TV, although we have some. It's not going to show in all of the newspaper ads, although we have some. But what we do have is we're going toe-to-toe when it comes to knocking on doors. And in fact, I think a lot of the Democrats are taking Hawaii's voters for granted, and they are not working as hard as we are. We know that they're just starting to get out there, going door to door or putting up their signs, and so be it. But some of our candidates have been doing this for a while now, and we're just hoping that it's going to be enough to take us over the top. And we've got three great candidates today with us. They're going to show us that we can have a Hawaii that was open for business, even though back in 2002, when Governor Lingle was elected as a Republican, she put that open for business sign back on the door, quote unquote, of Hawaii. And since then, you know, haven't been doing well, and we've dropped in the rankings. And some of the rankings are startling. We are at the bottom of the list across the country. And so let me just share some of those stats with you, if it's all right, Rick.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
All right. So Hawaii was ranked as the second worst state for business in the country by Forbes in 2019. And a significant reason behind this horrible ranking is our, guess what, tax burden.
Mm-hmm.
I just answered it for you.
Shocking.
Is our tax burden. Hawaii has also had the second highest tax burden of the states in 2018 at 11.57%. Only New York was higher. So if you combine the high tax burden with the cost of living, that is the highest in the nation. We are 92.9% higher than the national average.
Mm-hmm.
And it just creates an environment where the financial survival for businesses without government assistance is, you know, extremely difficult. And, you know, we have some of the highest poverty measures across the some of the highest poverty measures across the nation as well.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Well, the one thing, and I've referred to this on the morning show, is that we have been conditioned with a mentality that either A, we deserve it, or number two, lucky we live Hawaii. We utilize the latter to give an explanation why you have multiple generations that have to live in one home, that to justify the cost. Yeah, you have to pay extra, but boy, you have great sunshine, you have all of this, so come on, you know, that's what we have to do. Then the perpetuation of that generationally brings us to where we are today. Those of us around the table and others, yes, we're just going, what in the world? This is unacceptable. Where others have been conditioned to say, well, you know, we just do our best because we're lucky. We're lucky because we're Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And we're lucky that we have a home as one of the 50th state in the union, where it's intolerable that we have to be relegated and have numbers like that.
Right.
We deserve better.
We deserve better.
So that's why it's advantageous that information is shared on a regular basis about
Absolutely.
This. And when we talk about mentality and the shift, it's difficult once you reach a level of maturity and et cetera. Can't change the old ways. I hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if in the four walls of our own homes, if we're not preparing the next generations with that common sense approach and attitude, Lynn, we're not going to turn it around. All we have to do is look at the Commonwealth of Virginia and the changes that have been established and made there to justify that it can happen there. It can happen here.
It absolutely can happen here. And I was sitting next to a congressman who was just visiting the islands yesterday from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
who said, like, in his area, it was very much a blue area when he first started running for office. And it actually became a red area in Chicago. You know, so there's a lot of hope for us if we can believe that. I know a lot of our candidates go door to door and they hear the apathy. They hear nothing's going to change in mm-hmm. Hawaii. Well, the change starts with you. The change starts with us, with me. You know, if we can be dedicated to seeing a brighter future for tomorrow, we can do it. You know, it's been done in other states, just like you said.
Introduce the three folks that are in studio, and we'll halt at the introductions, take our break, and then come back and speak extensively.
That sounds great. Today we have Matthew Kahn. He's a candidate, Senate District 21. That's over in the Kapolei area. We have Garner Shimizu, who is a candidate in the Moana Lua Gardens, Moana Lua Valley, Foster Village area. That's my former stomping
mm-hmm.
ground.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret Lim, candidate in House District 27, and that's the area of Nu'u'anu and a whole bunch of area that surrounds that area. And we have them today. And again, like I said, they're all business owners or former business owners and can talk very much about our climate for business in Hawaii.
Tell us how we can connect with the Hawaii Republican Party.
You can do that by going to Hawaii Republicans with an S. .org, HawaiiRepublicans.org. And also, you can go to StandForHawaii.org, where it has our messaging on why people need to get from apathetic to active, engaged, and voting Republicans this year.
There we have it. You're dialed in together. It is Stand for Hawaii, presented by the Hawaii Republican Party on this Saturday and each Saturday at this time. When we come back, we'll meet our friends in studio.
Welcome back to Stand for Hawaii on News Radio 830 KHVH.
As Ken has mentioned, 9:16 in the morning, and Stand for Hawaii underway today. As always at this time, Lynn Finnegan, our first candidate. Who would you like to introduce?
Well, let's go with Garner Shimizu, since we're from the same stomping grounds of District 32. Garner Shimizu is a retiree. But he came from a background in working as a business owner, a family-owned business here in Hawaii in the construction industry. Garner has such a heart for his district as well as Hawaii, and I would like to just go straight to Garner.
Garner, very good morning. Aloha to you.
Aloha. Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you for being a part of the program, and thanks to Lynn for the intro, but would you mind just expand a little bit more? Garner, originally from where?
Born and raised Honolulu, Moanalua. Graduated Moanalua High School, University of Hawaii, mechanical engineering graduate. Worked a couple years as a private consultant, and then went to work for my dad's family-owned sheet metal construction company. It's interesting because I vowed I would never work for him because I saw how hard he worked, and I almost never saw him because how hard it is to run a business. And I just didn't want that lifestyle for myself. But the Lord told me, go help your dad. And it was a great experience. I learned a lot, and I'm a better person for it.
And there we go. Great to hear. Would you mind do a compare and contrast of the initial days of you working with your father in the family company to where we are today? What has been the most impactful milestones that you cite, and what we're experiencing today? What is it you'd like to focus on to try and repair?
Okay, that's quite a loaded question, Rick. But I think the technology definitely is way beyond what I started with. Even when we started, we had to get into computerization, and you know, it went from drawing blueprints with your hands and you know, pencils and paper, to now you have 3D CAD, you know, virtual reality almost, and it's quite a step up. That's why education is so important. You know, one of the main factors is still working with the unions, because we were a union company. And as I was thinking about the business climate and what was a key thing to take away as far as business, obviously getting qualified workers is one of the hardest things. And especially with the pandemic where things were shut down, you had all these free money being passed around. People were, you know, being paid to stay home. Just no incentive. And that's, I think, a challenge as people are so pessimistic in a way. You know, they don't have hope. And our society, as Lynn pointed out, how things are so hard that it almost becomes, why try harder? And I think the unions are very strong right now. They're a very important working partner. But I think it could be improved. I would like to see all the unions, you know, as far as construction, because that's where I come from. I was on the board of trustees and involved in a couple of negotiations, you know, that sets their wage package for the next 5 years. And because of the construction industry being a consortium of different trades, every labor trade has their own package. And because we were one of the later ones to negotiate, it was hard to not follow what everybody else was doing. But I kind of saw this like couple of cycles, and I thought, this is unsustainable. We can't be giving raises and raises, and we're pricing ourselves out of the market. So I just thought it would be a great idea. I know it's hard to take away something when people have it, but sometimes I think we need to make sacrifices for the betterment of the good for everyone. And, you know, if all of the unions got together and say, you know, we can live with what we have, we're doing well. Let's protect what we have, and let's look at, how we can help each other and not be such a win-lose situation, but a win-win situation. And, you know, I'm a idealist, and I like to solve problems. And I like to think that if we all get together and put each other's interests ahead of our own, that we can accomplish so much more. And that's what I'd like to see for not only construction unions, but, you know, government and everyone, you know. So I'm looking forward to being a voice, being a part of a legislature who does things for the betterment of everyone, and not just special interests or self-interest. So
I'm just curious, in your life and business experience, why is it that organized labor favors the Democrat Party with the installation of candidates and incumbents and the disproportionate amount of money that members are donating to those Democrat campaigns?
You know, I don't know all of the backstory, but I think if you go back to the history of the start of the unions and the Democratic Party, from what I understand, had their beginnings at the beginning of statehood, which at the beginning we had immigrant workers being taken advantage of. And they had a righteous beginning. You know, workers needed representation. And the Democratic Party at that time, which is not the Democratic Party of today, joined forces and they tried to do something for the people. 60 years later, it's a much different situation. The power pendulum has swung from one end to the other. And I think sometimes you hear that term plantation mindset, and what was established 60 years ago and strengthened has become a stronghold, and it's hard to break certain mentalities, that partnership. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Garner, please.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to say something because that same congressman that I was talking to yesterday from Chicago has said that in his area, the Republicans are the blue collar workers now. It's mm-hmm. totally flipped. And I think that's what I'm seeing, too, because our unions, when I talk to some of the union bosses and I've talked to some of the union members, they're understanding that private industry, as well as the worker, you know, employer, employee, you need to work together in order to have a job. If that business goes out of business, you also don't have a job. So we know that there's an interdependence that takes place between an employer and an employee. And I think that we're going to start seeing more blue-collar workers supporting Republicans.
And I don't want to use the ecumenical unions equal Democrats at all. But there is a majority. Organizations such as SHOPO, in its mm-hmm. present iteration, are open to endorse based on qualification performance beyond party. And so we have appreciation for that.
Yes.
Garner, in your district, what are the concerns expressed top of mind when you're visiting people's homes, having get-togethers? What are people sharing with you is, Garner, we really need help on this?
Well, in our district, the Red Hill water situation is paramount, you know, safe water. And government inaction or apparent inaction to solve the problem seems to be a high priority. Crime, cost of living, obviously. People are almost giving up on Hawaii and having exit strategies to leave. You know, myself mm-hmm. personally, my youngest daughter can't afford to live here, and she lives on the mainland because of finances, you know, and the numbers just don't work out. So it's sad to hear people saying they're leaving Hawaii, or they have such a apathetic, no hope spirit about them. It is really sad to see that.
Well, I can attest to it. My 19-year-old daughter, she's in college. She does not return home. She stays and lives full time because she can earn a living while attending school to help defray cost of her education. There's no way that you would be able to find a position. And again, 19, inexperienced, but that's what minimum wage is designed for. But in the state she lives in, she's earning nearly $20 an hour. They're able to pay that amount for an entry level. Can't do it here at home. And even if it was that amount, she still would have a difficult time in navigating. So I appreciate exactly that. Mm-hmm. The exit of so many good quality people, most of them younger, not older, younger, because they recognize we can't make a life for ourselves here. And that's profane.
Mm-hmm.
Profane.
Yeah, I agree, Rick.
So if that is the case, if elected, what would be your priority list? And if it's even the specific crafting of a bill resolution that you believe would make an impact to these issues?
Well, I don't know if I thought that far ahead. I'd like to see government be audited and reinvented. I think there's a lot of inefficiency, waste that just, that's just my guess. You know, when you get something that's so big, so complicated, you have all of these departments, it's so complex that it's just by nature inefficient. And I think it's not a knock on the hardworking people in those positions in the government. It's just a consequence of what's there. And I think we need to go back, revisit it, reinvent it as much as we can, and streamline it up to today's situation. As we talked about technology being growing and different from 20 years ago, you know, our government needs to be different than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, even 10 years ago. We need to be creative and just think outside of the box, because that's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Gardner, if folks would like to connect with you, learn more about you and your campaign, help and assist, how do they do so?
You can visit my website, voteshimizu.com, and also my Instagram. My daughter, Taryn, is doing an awesome job. And
there we go.
Yeah.
I can't even spell Instagram. That's why I have kids. So.
Yeah.
And there we go. Gardner Shimizu, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Thank you indeed. Lynn Finnegan, before we take our break, thoughts?
Yes. You know, what I hear Gardner saying is that, you know, Hawaii's business climate could be so much better. And what we're talking about also is in the innovation and the redesign of government, that we might be able to actually do something that government doesn't do, which is lower fees, lower taxes. You know, it's quite simple from the Republican platform that's what we want to see. We want to circulate more money in Hawaii by giving tax breaks, by cutting taxes. And then we work within our means as a government. And I think what you're going to see is, like, when you're talking about that, Gardner, is government so often will look at companies and say, pay them more. But when it comes to government, they say, let's take more. And so it's kind of talking out of two sides of your mouth. They should understand that our struggles of operating a government should be efficiency, just like the businesses have to be.
On that note, we're going to transition over and more friends in studio that you will hear from, along with Lynn Finnegan, chair of the Hawaii Republican Party. This edition of Stand for Hawaii will continue in a moment.
Welcome back to Stand for Hawaii on News Radio 830 KHVH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 9:32 in the morning here on News Radio 830K Tree, Stand for Hawaii, presented by the Hawaii Republican Party, and Chair Lynn Finnegan with us this morning. Lynn, enjoying the conversation as always, and who would you like to chat with next?
Yes, we have candidate Matthew Kahn. Again, I mentioned that he's from the Kapolei area, Senate District 21, and I just met Matthew Kahn a few months ago, maybe about 6 months ago or so. And, you know, he reminded me of being a young Republican with a young family that really wanted to just get involved and do whatever he could to change the trajectory for Hawaii. He's a small business owner, and I'm going to let him talk more about who he is.
And we love to do that. Thank you, Lynn. And Matthew, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you for having me, and thank you, Lynn, for inviting us.
Oh, yes.
This is a great opportunity.
Our pleasure.
Awesome, yes. awesome. We'll start the same way as we did earlier. Originally from where?
Born and raised in Hawaii. Grew up in Kalihi. Started off in the valley and grew up down the street over here on Kahai Street.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of close to where Alicia's Market is. You guys know where that is? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people live over there. That's kind of crazy, right?
I know, but thank goodness for Alicia's Market. We'll just start right there. Kalihi side school?
Graduated from Farrington.
Farrington?
Yeah.
My kids went Damien, so it's like Farrington West.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
it's right there.
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah.
Same. Mm-hmm. What compelled you to run for office?
Well, like Lynn said, at first I just wanted to be a part of the process. I just wanted to be you know, a help any way I possibly could, whether that was through social media or just volunteering. And then the opportunity came up to actually run for office, for legislation. So I took the opportunity. And I think with our business, you know, I think we've been in business since 2011. I was also working for the church. And I think I recently stepped down to be more available for the business. But I thought to myself, you know, it doesn't really matter how much time I put into the business if the landscape here, the business landscape here in Hawaii doesn't change. I think what happened during the pandemic was that was unfair to small business owners on so many fronts. And I just wanted to be a part of actually, you know, changing that for small businesses. So
if I ever, ever, ever hear science and data for your health and safety again, I'm going to explode. And I'm glad that you're citing this, because if you look at Haynes from the Democratic Party, it's explained to say we prevented the loss of 4,000 lives. And everything was, I remember those days, everything was projection. Everything. Nothing in stone. No, it was all, well, we have to prevent the unsubstantiated. Mm-hmm. Which promoted fear, which promotes compliance. And the important part is it impacts the day-to-day lives of so many. Yeah. Please share your business and what the impact was to you and your business and perhaps of others that you're familiar with.
Okay. So when the pandemic hit, we had our this new retail business in Kahala Mall for about 9 months. So very fresh. So when it dropped, they had the whole shutdown, the whole quarantine. And that was about 2 months, I think, from mid-March to mid-May. And that was rough, because you ask any business owner, small business owner, that when you start off, the first actual 5 years of starting a business is hard enough already. Then you add that into the mix. Then you add that you have to still pay your rent. It's not like residential places where you were forgiven. They still expected money out of nowhere. We had to completely shut down our shop because it was non-essential. And that was very, very rough for us. And but, you know, our church family really supported us. And it's hard to even think back about it, because it was such a dark place, you know. It was very, very hard for my wife and I to manage.
Sure.
But we did. And we had to homeschool our kids. I think that was rough too. And that, just balancing that as a young family, young business, seeing my family having to weekly get tested, seeing friends lose their jobs. I think we can't be have short-term memory. That Amen. Stuff just happened, you know.
If you don't mind, I'd just like to state, this was not the coronavirus that affected everything that you're stating. It was positions of leadership, and some would say the abuse of the power contained with those that promulgated this upon everybody. The emotion and what you're sharing in reflecting back and going back in that time, I hope people are embracing, as what you said, never, ever forget. Because the darkness that permeated everywhere in some ways still remains.
Yeah,
it's not over. The pandemic, oh, we survived that. No. Hold on. The lingering effects and the aftermath have been devastating to so many.
Oh, yeah. I think the mental health side of everything, I've seen a lot of people, even just in my neighborhood, you know, I walk outside and I, just local people before, they used to be a little bit more, you know, they would at least acknowledge you're there, you know, and say, hey, how's it going? This sense of hopelessness, the depression, you know, substance abuse, alcoholism, domestic violence, and I've seen it. I see it on people's faces in my neighborhood, and it's a pretty nice neighborhood. But people are down in the dumps, you know.
Yeah.
And especially with men, they don't like to admit that, you know, that they're dealing with some mental health issues, you know. Mm-hmm. But this is all dealing with what happened in just the past 2.5 years. So I wanted to be a part of the process of actually turning things around, not just, you know, hoping and praying. And you got to do that, but we need a village mentality again. Everybody's got to play their part. And for me, I'm already serving on a big, huge capacity when I was working for the church as well. I was working there since 2018. I just recently stepped down, but I can see it. I could see people coming into service. And when I'm doing worship, I was leading worship, and you could just see them crying. You could see them just really just carrying a heavy load.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think I'm called to such a time as this. And some of my friends here today with Margaret and Garner and many of us running in the Republican Party, we just want to be a part of the process. We're literally nobody from nowhere, and we just want to be a part of the process. We're not career politicians. We just have a heart to serve, and we want to see change.
I wasn't going to correct anything you said, but I'm going to correct the nobody from nowhere. You are somebody from somewhere here at home. Matthew with us here. Matthew, if folks would like to learn more about you, what's the best way?
You can reach me. My website is confor.hawaii.com. Instagram is confor.hawaii, @confor.hawaii, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Con is spelled K-H-A-N, because I've spelt it wrong a couple times. So the H comes before the A. K-H-A-N.
I want to tell you, I loved you in Star Trek 2. That is probably the most important part. If you being successful in achieving your seat, SD21, have you given thought to, once you're in, what your list will be? And let's start with number one. From a legislator standpoint, what would that be and why?
Well, we really have to look at the policies in place and the laws in place, because everything is going to actually piggyback off of that. I know in my district there's a lot of things going on with crime, and if you talk to a police officer, they say there's something. If you ask them what could we do better, they said, well, other than talking directly to your elected officials, they need more funding and they need better laws. I know Garner mentioned this as well too. It's like sometimes they need less laws, you know, because it gets kind of confusing. So I would want to concentrate there, work as a team, you know, put our heads together, and we need the vote. I mean, we obviously need the numbers in the seats to actually make a dent in anything. And I think that's why we're all here. Because if just a few of us get in, you're going to have a lot of the same. So, just changing policy, doing audits, seeing where, you know, where the holes in the boat are, maybe reprioritizing how we're devving up the funding, you know, the funding pie that they have, and just reprioritize.
We have just about a minute. I'm just going to bring up a news story to get your take. Stadium. The project has been modified, or I could say derailed, but then I'd bring up rail and we'd be here for 5 days. But stadium project, two parts. One, stadium itself, and then secondarily, the PPP aspect, commercial, residential, and more. $400 million allocated in the last legislative session. Kind of last minute, just days away from him exiting office, the governor changed the whole model. And as a matter of fact, Mike McCartney of DBED is saying, we are going to go in-house instead of out. I could say out-house and be more accurate, 3P. What is your take on this project, and what would your role be in decision making for it? And about less than a minute.
Okay. I know I was kind of taken back about the project altogether. I think the rail itself is already, I mean, we need to finish that. I mean, we need revenue. You know, I don't know where this money is going to to come from to actually finish this project, to be honest. And I think a lot of people feel the same way on this island. They're just like, after going through what we went through with the rail, I mean, this kind of sign blinded everybody. We're not even sure what happened. We didn't even know that the project was changed. We're just kind of just learning real time, just like everybody else.
Right.
But I mean, I know at some point, if you were to do the stadium, you're going to have to add the housing, you know, to complement it. But I really would like to just, I don't know enough about the project to actually make
Right.
Yeah, we'd have to work together as a team to really put our heads together for that one. I really wish I knew the answer to that.
Yeah. Bottom line, though, people can learn more about you. Mm-hmm. And one more time for all your contact information.
Conforhawaii.com. On Instagram, it's @conforhawaii.
There we have it. Matthew, thank you so very much for sharing and being a part of the program.
Thank you.
There we go. Lynn Finnegan, in about half a minute, your thoughts.
I just love, again, the hearts of our candidates are just tremendous. And what I love about Matt is that he is taking to his community represent the unheard voices.
I'll tell you what, his voice was heard today.
Amen.
No doubt about it. We're going to return with more of Stand for Hawaii presented by the Hawaii Republican Party. And that happens in just a couple of moments. So stay with us.
Welcome back to Stand for Hawaii on News Radio 830 KHVH.
Welcome back. It is Stand for Hawaii right here on News Radio 830 KHVH. Lynn Finnegan, we're moving forward this Saturday morning.
We certainly are. And forward motion is what we need for Hawaii. Next on our agenda for this program is Margaret Lim. She is a candidate over, like I mentioned, in the Nu'uanu area. Mm-hmm. And Margaret, I met just a few months ago, maybe even 6 months ago. And I can tell you, I was just extremely impressed with her because, she's maybe like 5'2". And she packs a punch, let me tell you. She is very, she perseveres through adversity, just the kind of person like all of these three that you want as a candidate and as a representative representing you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Margaret, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to see you. Margaret, we'll start with you the same way. Originally from where?
Originally from the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
My family moved here in 1987. First generation immigrants, and from there we built our business, and it's been 35 years.
Wow. As a matter of fact, my family to the Philippines, we have, we're Filipino as well. I'm a quarter Filipino, and I always say it's the best 25% you'll ever find.
Yes.
And there you go. But heading back to the Philippines is going to be a delight for us.
Yes, it is.
Phenomenal. May you chat a little bit about your business, please?
Yeah, so when we first moved here, my family started from scratch, the Golden Coin Bake Shop and Restaurant.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's been 35 years. I worked there for about 25 years before going into real estate.
Oh.
Yeah, so I've been a real estate broker for the last almost nine years.
Oh.
And so recently, I just felt called to run for this race.
Good for you. First of all, I want to thank you and your family for Golden Coin. You are singularly responsible for at least 20 pounds of my overweight condition because Golden Coin is the best. I just I had to get that very clear.
Thank you for saying that.
Phenomenal. If you don't mind, I'll refer to that. Running a business here in the state, as we've heard from more of our friends, the climate that we have today, and if you wouldn't mind about the restaurant business, and then I'd like to transition to real estate. But what is it that you're seeing, hearing, related to within the family of the biggest challenge that you face today?
Okay, and just to make it clear, I'm no longer involved in the operations of the family business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have conversations with family members about the business still?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. And what comes out of those discussions?
So, yeah, when we first started it, it was, you know, back then people are just hardworking. And that's what made us successful. We work hard as a family. We, you know, wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, work 18 hours, full-time student, full-time working for the family business. But now, 35 years later, I look at the generation now. People are, you know, just more complacent, not working as hard, and just taking things more for granted. And so I really treasure that, knowing that, you know, we were raised being hardworking and persevere, and, you know, self-discipline is very important.
Right. Sounds to me there's a entitlement has crept to this generation.
Right.
Transitioning to real estate, and of course, affordable housing is always in vogue when we talk about our body politic here at home. What are your thoughts about affordable housing? Is there a desperate need? And if so, what's the best way to achieve more affordable housing?
Yeah, affordable housing is definitely one of the top things that I hear about in my constituents as I, you know, door knock. And so I think there's a great need. Like we mentioned earlier, people are moving away just because it's no longer affordable here. And of course, this last month, we've seen interest rate go up, you know, over 6%. It's really crazy how one person, you know, one couple can afford a single family home, let's say medium price, let's say $800,000, with interest rate being at 6%. You're really looking at about $4,500 monthly payment. Mm-hmm. And that's really crazy.
Yeah.
It's no longer affordable.
So there are some that say that, well, government must get involved. There needs to be a ceiling, or we can no longer sell our real estate property to national or international buyers, or there's a whole litany of things. If affordable housing is that essential, how do we achieve affordability?
In my opinion, you can't put a ceiling, right? People can always price their property however they want to, but it's really up to the market to determine if that price is acceptable. So in my opinion, what the government can do is to, you know, help first-time home buyers, and by making it more affordable in the sense that they provide some kind of tax credit, and also help with down payment. So as what's being done with the Hawaii Homeowner Center, that's one thing. And also recently we've heard Duke Ayona and Tupai propose the homeowner initiative for locals. So it's basically, you know, building homes and keeping it local. Just, you know, everything stays local. Even the developers are local.
So if my understanding with that plan, one of the most compelling is that if you can afford a rent, you can afford a house payment. And there would be a governmental, not so much subsidy, but guaranteeing of loans not dissimilar to a VA home loan benefit. Is that something you could see as key to helping resolve the affordable housing issue?
Yes, totally. When I first heard the program, I told Lynn, I'm for it. Mm-hmm. You know, the main point is keeping everything local. You know, we use local developers, contractors, and also sell to locals or rent to locals.
It's 9:54 in the morning. We're talking again with Margaret Lim. And tell us about your district, House District 27.
Oh, the more I door knock, the more I'm loving my district. The more I realize the people really can relate with me. And so the top priority in my district is the crime, the feeling of unsafe. You know, people would tell me, oh, I used to go walk to Safeway, to Long's. Now I can no longer do that.
The Poly Long's and Safeway?
Yeah, Poly Long's and
Safeway. I live downtown. I don't walk there anymore.
Yeah. So
at all.
Yeah. So I see that, you know, they really want change to happen. And so I feel honored and humbled to be able to be where I am today, where I can you know, self-fund my campaign and at the same time be able to come to this point in my life where I really want to give back to my community, to this beautiful state. This is the state where our dream, you know, I have four siblings. We all achieve our American dream, and this is what I want to leave behind.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Margaret, one final, I'll do a headline and get your take. The Hawaii State Supreme Court on September 8th rendered a decision in a felony case and overturned a conviction based on constitutional law. And the Honolulu prosecutors utilized a criminal complaint instead of a grand jury indictment. That was overturned on that premise. A special session has been called. It has not convened as of yet. This deals with crime because felons are being released as we speak. What's your opinion of this story?
Yeah, since crime is really the number one concern, probably, yeah, the number one concern in my district, I am against that, and I hope, you know, we could quickly do something. Like mentioned earlier, a special session, I think, is very, very important. We can't afford to see more crimes happening. People are afraid to go out. Pretty much, I would say 90% of the doors I knock, they have some kind of security. Mm-hmm. If it's not, you know, security system, it's dogs everywhere. So right. It tells me people don't feel safe anymore.
That is, I understand. How can folks connect with you, learn more about you and your campaign, Margaret?
Well, in my campaign cards, I put down my phone number. I want my people to know that I'm very accessible. Mm-hmm. They can call me at 808-551-4532 or visit my website at lim4hawaii.com. It's the number 4, lim4hawaii.com.
I want to thank you so very much for your time and joining us today, and wish you all the best on your future endeavors, Margaret.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Thank you indeed. We're going to wrap things up, however, with Lynn Finnegan. Lynn Finnegan, a couple of moments to once again put a bow on the present that we had today.
It would have to be a huge bow because these three are definitely a huge presence. Mm-hmm. You know, what we have with the three of them is, and I'm going to wrap it up by saying the American dream. You know, these guys dreamed. We talked about coming from humble means, coming without, you know, coming to America, coming to Hawaii without much, and then making a successful family business. You saw that with Matthew Kahn as well, where he talked about they were investing in a small business. He and his wife, that was their sole source of income for the small business, with the intention that they wanted to do things on their own and see what they could do and empower themselves and their family. Mm-hmm. And that's like, again, I see that as the American dream. You know, I also look at Garner and I see the same thing, you know, being raised with his family, not seeing his dad, just like I didn't hardly see my dad who worked three jobs, you know. And so it's that idea that you sacrifice now for the future because you want to give that opportunity for your generations to come. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see with all of these three and many more who run as Republicans, that it's that empowerment, it's that opportunity. It's all of these things that don't make people complacent. It makes them right. Hopeful and see a vision in the future.
Lynn Finnegan, many, many thanks as always, and we will speak to you next week.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you, and thanks for all of our friends in studio and